Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Monday, April 19th, 2021, 15 minutes past the hour. And we have got a great guest this hour and so much going on in the world. It's always a pleasure to speak with him. You probably remember him best as the host of the very successful, highly rated television syndicated program, Judge Joe Brown. What a pleasure it is to bring to these microphones, as it always is, Judge Joe Brown. Judge, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Good to hear it. Judge, wanted to start right off the bat here. The Derek Chauvin trial is going on, which stems from the George Floyd incident of last summer, the George Floyd death. Closing arguments are coming up, so we probably will have a decision in this case very soon. We don't know what that will be yet. What do you make of the whole George Floyd situation, the trial so far, and what do you think is going to happen at the end?
Well, unlike in the Dr. Cosby trial, you're seeing a judge who's keeping control of the proceedings and his courtroom. I'll give him that. That was very good. As far as my personal opinion about how things are going, it's not what a lot of people are going to... There's a good chance that he'll be acquitted. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but I'd say there's a 3 to 5 chance that he'll be acquitted. He could be convicted. He could be convicted of a lesser included offense, but there's a good chance that the defendant would walk. That's not popular, but there's a good chance that that would happen. The state has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did what he did with the appropriate intent to kill or to cause a consequence. And I don't know if they're doing that. But a jury could find him guilty, but on the other hand, there's a good chance that they'll acquit him. So this isn't exactly the way things go these days. Hurry up and wait. Or patience is a great virtue. Everybody wants to know right now, and the news media plays this off as an entertainment for ratings purposes, and there's a whole lot of speculation rather than reporting going on. So let's see.
If Chauvin is acquitted, based on what we saw last summer with the rioting and the protesting, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, media has been hyping violence and disorder for the last year and a half to a great extent to get rid of Trump. And also try to attribute what has been a media hype situation to him, which is not the case. But we have a California situation, and I say that in terms of the forest fire scene in California, where a carelessly thrown cigarette butt, even static electricity can cause something to erupt into a conflagration. We have a lot of tension out there. So we'll see. It could be a long, warm spring rather than a long, hot summer, which is what we used to say back in the 60s when such situations developed.
When it comes to trials like these. Maybe you can give us some insight into this, Judge, and not speaking directly to this trial, but when somebody dies in an altercation with an on-duty police officer, why is it, does it seem, the perception, that the police officer usually gets off in the end, more than another citizen would?
Well, I don't find that to be the case. That hasn't been my experience. But what you have a lot of times is that things that happen are taken out of context, and there is an inflamed public or a portion of that public that really, really is bent out of shape by its circumstances at the present or at that particular moment. Another thing is this thing called jury nullification. Mr. Floyd, the late Mr. Floyd, was not a savory character because of a number of things to a certain large segment of the public. And if you get them on the jury, they might just say, well, you know, good riddance. And, or, I don't want them where I am. Or, I'm going to back these guys up. They protect us. So that happens. And although it's not popular, that jury nullification can do some astonishing things. I can recall several instances where I had a notorious homicide case in my courtroom, and the press and the family was lusting for blood. When a jury came back with a question that in each instance was identical. Your Honor, if we feel that the victim deserved killing, do we have to convict the defendant? Now, I'm not saying that's what's going on here, but you do have an element of jury nullification as well as failure to prove beyond a reasonable doubt into a moral certainty. The issue gets compounded because the way the media hypes up the situation and the way the public perceives it has nothing to do with the standards of reasonable doubt. I am even getting something that astonishes me in this day and time, what with the frequency that you hear the phrase, you have a right to remain silent on various and sundry TV cop dramas and various and sundry movies, and ought to be somebody's progress through the educational system in the United States. I hear folks saying, Judge, how come they can't make him testify? Like, it says, my goodness, don't you know there's a thing called the Fifth Amendment? Yeah, but why has that got to apply here? Well, what do you think it is? And our educational system has fallen so far that there are people who have grown up here who are adults who have never grasped that concept. So there's a lot wrong that comes out when one of these trials comes on. The other thing is you have to understand these cases are cherry-picked. There are a number of situations that occur on a regular basis that look like this, but they don't get picked up because some little 23-year-old sitting in the newsroom didn't see it come across his screen in terms of a feed, and it wasn't a slow news day.
When we look at this case as a whole, because the way the media has covered it, where is it going to go down in cases like Rodney King? We still remember that name. Is it going to be something?
1991, yes.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, or this, yeah, in the L.A. area. That was bad. That was a thing where Los Angeles was a tinderbox. There were tensions. And that went across a big spectrum of the population in Los Angeles. Black, brown, white, Asian, you name it. And the place exploded. Now, what happened with Rodney King was the officers wound up being tried in one of the multiple L.A. County court districts where there was a jury pool favorable to the officers. And they were acquitted. The riots occurred, and then the feds indicted the officers on violation of Rodney King's civil rights. They went to trial in the federal system, and they were convicted. The federal system is a scary one, and we've let that get out of control because, to a great extent, thanks to the works of Biden and Strom Thurmond and senators, you have a situation where a federal prosecutor is allowed or encouraged to use the criminal justice system to bankrupt or completely destroy someone financially with criminal charges, even if they don't anticipate a conviction. So under the federal system, these officers were convicted on violation of King's civil rights. I guess that was supposed to be a sop after the fact to assuage the public anger. The thing that happened 30 years ago was that cell phone footage was a new thing, or not footage, but cell phone recordation of events was fairly new because that technology had just developed. So nowadays it's commonplace, and instead of people acting with sanity to diffuse or stop something from going on, everybody wants to record it. But it is what it is.
When this all shakes out in the end, where does it leave race relations in the United States?
Not well. Not good. You see, one thing that has happened, Hollywood 50-some years ago was going through a transition because of the impact of colored television on the movie industry. They needed cash flow, and some idiots decided to pick the lowest common denominator of things that went on in the black community to glorify under the theory that this is an untapped money market out there where people at the bottom would respond to a glorification of their circumstances, not one where we're trying to ramp up. But with movies that started with something like Black Caesar, starting Fred the Hammer Williams, where they glorified a drug kingpin and made him the hero of the movie. So somebody rides off into the sunset smoking a big cigar after committing multiple murders and to get over the, get on top of the drug trade. And it was bad. In fact, I can remember a number of us, we were, I think, seniors at UCLA, we went down there to look at that movie, and when we walked out, everybody said, what in the world was that? You know, they glorified, we didn't use that term then, but they glorified drug dealers as being the heroes? Where are we going? So when you do that, you find that you're serving this, not serving a function, but it's early in the morning for me. I stayed up till 5 o'clock writing on something, excuse me. But you took a situation where there is a crime involving poisoning a community, and you made that somehow or another heroic. What in the hell is going on? So when you set this kind of environment up over a 50-year period where people perceive and operate and ideate in terms of a poisoned environment and worldview, it's not surprising that you get a lot of tension that develops, particularly when the United States has a problem it refuses to address, and that is the obsolescence of the workforce brought about by industrial technology and computerization. It's left the solution to private enterprise, which is not going to solve the problem. So you have a prison industry that is not in place to control crime, but to control surplus labor. Labor is a commodity like wheat, corn, or cotton, and I've said this before. So what happens is there is a process wherein you cut back the production of labor units, you subsidize the producer, and you store the surplus in a warehouse that is a prison rather than a typical warehouse or grain silo. The subsidy is the public assistance check, and cutting back of production is the proliferation of ideation that causes the kids to drop out, bang out, drug out, get knocked up too early, too often, develop inappropriate worldviews, ways of carrying self, lack of work ethic, lack of academic preparation to advance higher so that one could get a white-collar job, and a lack of vocational and avocational skills to perform on a blue-collar level. So you get a poisonous situation where you get public disorder, you get chaos that breeds a situation where people just pipeline right into the penitentiary to get them out of the labor market. There's no real rehabilitation because the system is not set up to do that. It doesn't want to do that because if you rehabilitate them, you just re-glut the labor market. So we have got a very poisonous thing going on out there. And Donald Trump's not the cause of it. It's just that Donald Trump was not matching the agenda of so many who are in news media and entertainment medias, and they created a very poisonous atmosphere for the last 4 years trying to get rid of him, but in the process they ramped up, heightened, as it were, the hostility and level of aggression in the system. So it's not a pretty picture.
Want to talk a little bit about the pandemic, which we're still involved in. Last week, I believe we all got word that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was being pulled from the shelf for causing some blood clots in people who had taken that vaccination. This gave a whole lot of people a reason who did not want to take the vaccine to not get the vaccine. What do you think happened there, and where do we stand on this?
Okay, you have a very dangerous situation going on out there. You have a virus that has jumped species. It has taken hold in the human population. It has become worldwide. It mutates very rapidly. And we are not through with it yet. We needed some kind of response. And frankly, rather than having a 5-year field trial like we usually have before we allow some medication to be widespread, it was an emergency situation, so everybody becomes a guinea pig. The circumstances were viewed as so dangerous that it was worth taking chances with experimental drugs. Now, that Johnson & Johnson one causes blood clots in a lot of people, it seems, or some people, or a significant enough number for others to be worried, so it's been withdrawn. But I am of that era when they did not have polio vaccinations or inoculations or polio vaccine, and I can remember when they acquired it and everybody flocked to get that soft vaccine, even though everyone knew there was a danger attendant upon taking it. It was like the disease was so bad, people were willing to take the risk. That is another item of propaganda that we have right now. Everyone feels entitled to be safe and have no danger and to be privileged and pampered, but that's not the way the world works. So the experimental nature of the various vaccines that we have out there have got people all, my God, it may have a danger. I'm supposed to be perfectly safe, but that's not the way the world works. And it's dangerous. And there's some little monsters that have invaded human bodies, taken them over so they can replicate. It's straight out of a horror movie.
When we look at this pandemic, we are into it just over a year now. People are getting frustrated, and they don't want to wear the masks anymore, and they do want to have the businesses open the way they used to be, and they feel that this is an infringement on their rights to have this mask mandate. What do you make of all that, legally and just as a citizen of the United States?
Health, safety, and welfare. That's one of the responsibilities and obligations of government. We forget that in our sense of heightened entitlement. Heightened sense of entitlement. If we reflect on human history, there have been a number of plagues that have swept through various places in the world and have done more than decimated the populations. A decimation is 1 in 10. We've had situations where 1/3 of a population is wiped out because of a disease. We have gotten so accustomed to the benefits of modern medicine, we do not recognize, do not accept, will not grasp or wrap our minds around the fact that there are natural forces and things out there that might overcome us. Mother Nature is a bitch, in other words, excuse the language. And we just don't get it. But then again, over the last 50 years, there's been a thing I find very unfortunate, and that is to downgrade those people in the white lab coats who are scientists and to put them in a suspect position. We depend on them. That enables, to a great extent, our sense of entitlement and privilege. But on the other hand, we don't trust them, and we hear stuff like holistic medicine now. Don't listen to these doctors. They're just trying to help the pharmaceutical company sell drugs. And we have remedies, just your diet, you can get, no. See, that thing is not good for humanity in this crowded situation that's dependent upon modern medicine to carry on. But we have really put ourselves in a bad corner and painted ourselves into it. So we're going to have to make some adjustments. The other thing is it looks like you may need a yearly booster, even if you've been fully vaccinated. It looks like the promised level of vaccinations is an outright prevarication, a lie, because in a lot of places people try hard to get vaccinated and can't. So it's not as available as we hear the hype on television. I note, too, the discrepancies in its availability. In Tennessee, unless you're one of the special category people, you have to be 55 and older to get vaccinated, whereas in places like California, it's 15 and above, or others 20 and above, and it's not evenly distributed around the country. Also seems to be a 1-1 correlation on how the state went in the last presidential election. If it's a Democratic state, there are vaccinations available, or vaccines are available. If it was Republican, they're not. So good old politics jumps in there in spite of protestations to the contrary. And public education, I hate to say it, is at an all-time low. I go places, not so much go, but I attend these Zoom conferences, and the level of ignorance as to scientific matters is just absolutely astonishing. I find that things that I learned long ago in the fifth grade, people with college education still haven't been taught. So it's not surprising we have a lot of confusion.
You know, Judge, it's very interesting because over the weekend, really, politics has not been the conversation as much as it was during the election, let's say, leading up to the inauguration of Joe Biden. Then in the last weekend, I was having a conversation with somebody who I think voted for President Trump. A matter of fact, I'm sure they did. And we were talking about the vaccination and the vaccines and how here in Ohio, the vaccination access definitely has increased in the last month. And the response to me was, well, don't you think that would have happened under President Trump as well? Do you think there is some correlation with who's in office, as you just said, about vaccination distribution? Or is it just it would have happened anyway, no matter who's in there?
I think there is a political aspect of vaccination availability, or vaccine availability. But let's be candid. Politicians have less than a damn thing to do with the science. The science is one of the guys we call nerds slapping his forehead as he wakes up at 4:17 a.m. in the morning and says, I got it, I think, and rushing down to the lab early to start a process of investigation to see if he came up with a solution. Those are the guys that come up with the cures, the palliatives, and anything else you want to call it, not the politicians. The politicians can throw money at it to enable them to get the resources they need to do it. A classic example is when Roosevelt, prompted by a letter from Einstein, put together the Manhattan Project that resulted in the atomic bomb. But ordinarily, we have a problem wherein science that is vital to us, particularly medical science, is drastically underfunded. A couple of years ago, when this thing started to get people's notice, January or February last year, not a couple of years ago, a year ago, I just, on a lark, decided to look up the research budgets of the people that appeared to be the top scientists in the field, and I noticed that you could take the salaries of five of the top investigators, scientific investigators, and their research budgets, and you still wouldn't have paid the salary of a top-ranked NBA player. So we apparently think watching basketball is more important and our safety. Now, this disease, this plague that we've got is caused by a beta coronavirus that's roughly designated as SARS-CoV-2. This is the third iteration. So there are essentially seven coronaviruses that are giving us grief. Four of them cause the common cold, to which there is still no cure, nor preventative other than hygiene. And three of them have caused SARS back 20 years ago, MERS, M-E-R-S, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, about 10 or 12 years ago, and now COVID-19, which is rampant at the moment. If we had a medicine or a medical environment like we had 100 years ago, this would be way more lethal than the Spanish flu, which wasn't from Spain. It actually had patient zero in Kansas, cooked in an army camp back 100 years ago, but it would have been a lot more lethal. Also, the other thing that we have to wrap our minds around is based on analysis from the pathogens that are recovered from skeletal remains and mass graves outside of places like London that suffered from the plague in the Middle Ages. We find that the agency that caused things like bubonic plague is not very virulent in today's terms, and modern medicine would have knocked it out. But this stuff is even more dangerous than those things that caused a third of the population to die at a given time. So we've just got this sense of entitlement that we endanger ourselves by having, and we don't want to go along with the hard choices that make things safer for us. And I also have this, I have to say it, I keep having an image in mind of a cafeteria at an elementary school or a cafeteria at a junior high school when those boys and girls, self-included, were checked to see if their parents had provided their vaccination proofs, were required to get a vaccine and get a shot. And I can remember some of my fellow students screaming and shrieking and two strong male teachers having to hold them on a wall while the nurse gave them a shot as they acted like they were being slaughtered. Self, I just, with equanimity, took the shot. No big deal. It was a prick. While others screamed and shrieked. And I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of the resistance comes from those who would scream and shriek upon getting the shots. Now, I got my two vaccinations. It took me 6 weeks of searching diligently to get the first one, and that was by accident because I stumbled on a location that gave a quick notice that they had had 11 cancellations, and I got one of those cancellations. And then I was trying to get the second one, and I searched and searched and was told there was nothing available. No reservations would even be taken for 5 more days for any period. And I just checked every hour, and I was going down the list of local places, and as I was watching the screen, a notice popped up, we have 2 cancellations, so I got that place, and it was 5 minutes from the house instead of one that I had set up several days after that was 90 miles away, 180-mile round trip to get it. But that's Tennessee. But while I got the thing, I was at a location that you stayed in your car to get it. And two women separately started just screaming bloody murder. And I said, what in the world? Oh, they're just reacting to getting the shot. So there is that element, but these two women apparently overcame their fear of the vaccination process to get it, but they went through panic and mind told them it was supposed to hurt, and they acted like it. So they didn't have any allergic reaction or anything, but there's that.
Judge, I have seen this in the last, I'm going to say 9 months since the mask mandate was put in place. I've seen this in grocery store lines. I've seen it in parking lots. When you have a person who has the mask on, and you have a person who does not have the mask on, and they get into an argument, why don't you have it on? You're endangering me. And then the person who doesn't have it on says it's my right not to wear it. Who is right in this argument? Because it's a complicated argument.
Okay, slam dunk.
Yeah.
When you sneeze, what are you supposed to do? Cover your mouth. When you cough, what are you supposed to do? Cover your mouth. Are you supposed to spit on the floor of the restaurant? Heck no. It's just a matter of courtesy and being polite. The mask isn't so much to protect the wearer, it's to protect others. And when you've got a rude somebody that has no manners and is ill-mannered and perceives that it is my right not to wear it, it's everybody else's right to be treated courteously by everyone they encounter.
Why has that become an issue? I know you have seen and heard about this as well. People will argue over this in public. I haven't seen people...
Oh, yes.
It's very strange.
Yes. Well, here is a solution that's not popular, but it's an old time one. Somebody said, look, man, I've taken karate for 30 years, and I'm going to knock you out if you don't put that mask on. I'll have you arrested. Well, then you'll get me arrested, and I'm sure I can make the bond. Said, but I'm going to knock you out. I'm going to drop you right now if you don't put one on or get out of here. Big God. But then again, I thought about it. I smiled. I said, I've only taken martial arts for 55 years, and my instructor was my late play brother. Actually, we look like he's a lot bigger addition to me. was listed as one of the foremost martial artists in the world. It's like, okay, you get rude, somebody might get ruder with you, but it's a public compact. We have manners, and wearing a mask in public is a matter of mannerability and courtesy. Not for you, it's for others. So just like you were supposed to, or hopefully been taught to cough, you know, cover, when you cough, cover your mouth, or sneeze, cover your mouth, or go to the bathroom to do certain things, you know, it's the same kind of thing. And people don't believe it because of what I was talking about earlier. We just don't trust science now, but we depend upon it so greatly in order to do our thing these days. So it's 50 years again of glorifying dysfunction in the media until we are very much victimized by that old propaganda thing that the Nazis knew. If you tell a lie long enough and loud enough, you can get anyone to accept the lie. And the lie is we don't need science, but we yet are so dependent upon it. We don't need courtesy because somehow or another being courteous is disrespectful to yourself. We have rights, but we don't understand license anymore as contrasted to rights. In other words, you may have a right to say something, but you don't say it in polite company.
In our last 6 minutes, Judge, Joe Biden has been president now just about 3 months. What have you made of these 90 days?
Actually, I think I am more disturbed than at any time I've ever been in my 74 years of breathing air on this planet. I have always been involved in looking at politics since I was in elementary school. That's just the way I got taught. And I always had some outstanding teachers who attempted to involve us. But I was in junior high school when I had to write a report on it. I watched the first debate on television between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy. I have seen what I see. And I have never seen anybody so hell-bent on trying to subvert the democratic process of governance. This avalanche of vomited out executive orders has gotten me astonished. The proposal to pack the Supreme Court is just mind-boggling. The efforts to control how people think is very alarming. It's kind of sort of, you expect jackbooted fascists to try and do things to censor the public. But in this case, we had pink panty wearing fascists who took over things and have attempted to propagandize the public and impose likewise draconian repression on the people. We did have a thing where years ago you would expect some fascist in Nazi-like uniforms goose-stepping around trying to take over the government and then imposing censorship on the press. We got some pink panty-wearing fascists who took over the press, propagandized the public, and now they're trying to take control of the government. And I don't like what I'm looking at. I don't at all.
As we head into the future, where do you see us headed?
I hate to use that word, but a bad place. Our expectations have brought us a corner. A front row seat in something Eisenhower talked about. He said, when a people become so enamored of their privileges that they become reluctant to do those things to keep those guarantees that provide the privileges in place, they are in danger. And we have gotten there.
When we look back at this time in our country, the time of the pandemic, the time of the presidential election of 2020, the time of racial unrest that we had last summer, what's this time going to be looked at like by historians 100 years from now?
It's going to be looked at as the time of deception. Let's take this racial unrest. That's the way it's being portrayed, but every time I have looked at video footage of the events, out of every 11 people at some sort of demonstration, I see 9 or 10 of them being white, whereas the demonstration is being cast as a black demonstration. I see, when it comes to Black Lives Matter, I see a very large LGBTQ component, an Antifa component. I see BLM, but that is not representative of Black Lives Matter. I see a hustle going on. And the way I heard it expressed was, there are a lot of little ratchet vanilla cupcakes with a very few chocolate sprinkles, engaged in some uproarious extended spring break activity with a lot of frustration and tension brought about by the COVID-19 sequestration situation.
it certainly is an interesting time, and it's always a pleasure to have Judge Joe Brown on this program. Judge, come back with us very soon, maybe when we hear the... how long do you think it'll be before we know the verdict in the Chauvin trial?
It depends on whether or not they're even able to reach a verdict. There is a possibility of a mistrial and a retrial.
Maybe we will talk soon. Judge, thank you so much for coming on.
Ed, excuse me. You got me, like I said, I didn't go to bed till 5 a.m. my time. And I think I got about 2 hours worth of sleep, so you got me kind of groggy. I'm just now waking up.
Well, hopefully you'll get some rest today and catch up on that sleep.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. Bye-bye.
The legendary Judge Joe Brown, can't go wrong there. Mid-morning coffee break with Adam Lepp is around the corner. For now, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Cuff to you. You're there to protect him. Take me through that walk. What do you see? How did it happen?
All right, well, as I walked through the door, I could see Ivan.